It is 9 a.m. and the recording has again begun. We will do a roll call.
Thank you.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes, here.
Dr. King?
Here.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Mr. Harris, are you present as well?
I am.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Present.
And I'm Judy Chepius. Okay, the meeting is restarted at 9:01.
All right. So this is an informal hearing. And let me go ahead and find my script. Are all parties present?
Yes, I am Ruth Wheeler.
This is Anne McClellan. I'm the attorney for Ms. Marker.
And I'm Susan Marker, and I'm present.
Okay. All right. I'm going to read a script. This call, call the matter to order. And this is being audio recorded. This is case number 20-37. And the licensee is Susan Marker, physical therapist. Judy, let's have the board members and staff and counsel introduce themselves.
Okay. Dr. Cornwall is just speaking. Dr. King?
Here.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
I'm here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
And Mr. Barton?
Here.
All of your board members and present.
Okay. So first, let's have Ms. Marker introduce herself. We'll also have your attorney introduce themselves. And just of note, this interview is being held pursuant to AR 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to get relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary action. One, issue a decree of censure. Two, place restrictions upon a licensee's praxis. Three, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. Four, issue other disciplinary action. Five, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. Okay. Mindy, are you the one that's going to give the brief introduction or overview?
Yes, I can do that.
All right. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. The patient is RW, and she alleges that on March 2nd of 2020, Ms. Marker injured her after she manipulated her neck and shoulder. RW had started treatment for her left shoulder due to pain and limited strength and motion in August of 2019 after a fall onto her left shoulder in June of 2019. The medical diagnosis was left rotator cuff tear. The patient was treated for 37 visits for these problems up to the visit date in question of 3/2/20. The medical record reflects that manual treatment of the cervical spine was initiated on 3/2, which was the 38th visit overall, by Ms. Marker. The patient could not complete her therapeutic exercise for her left shoulder following manual therapy intervention due to increasing pain on this date. RW states she was evaluated in the emergency room on 3/3/20 due to a significant increase in cervical pain, left arm pain, and she attributes that to the treatment from Ms. Marker she received one day prior. The board reviewed the potential allegations and had determined that they include ARS 2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to deliberate or negligent act or failure to act regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. Failing to supervise assistive personnel. And in addition to that, R424303, on each date of service, a physical therapist shall determine based on a patient's acuity and treatment plan whether it is appropriate to use assistive personnel to perform selective treatment intervention or physical therapy tasks for the patient. ARS 3224413, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. ARS 2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records. ARS, and finally, ARS 2044-22, providing treatment intervention unwarranted by the condition of the patient or treatment beyond the point of reasonable benefit.
Thank you. Let's, before we proceed any further, let's have everyone who will be saying anything, please, we need to swear you in, okay? So, Ms. Marker and RW?
Yes.
All right. Raise your hand. And do you swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
All right. Is there anyone else that will be speaking to Mindy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is there anyone else that will be speaking?
As her attorney, I'll be making arguments, but I will not be testifying.
Okay. That's why. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Ms. Marker, either you or your attorney, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, I would.
And I just wanted to briefly introduce, Ms. Marker is going to give the most of this statement. It will be her testimony. So if you'd like me to only give an opening and then her hold her statement in the form of testimony, that might make more sense. Or if you want to accept her statement now as her testimony, we'll proceed that way. I'll let you instruct us how you prefer to proceed on that.
I don't think I have a preference. If you'd like to make an introduction or something like that, and then she can provide her testimony.
How about I introduce, and I don't know if you're going to give Ms. Wheeler an opportunity as the complainant to speak, and if you are, then I would prefer that we go the normal process so Ms. Marker can speak after the complainant. So I'll just give a brief opening, and that is that you'll be hearing from Ms. Marker today. She will be testifying under oath via statement as to not only what happened with this particular patient, but as we've submitted to the board already, what she's done to change and improve her practice in response to this complaint, which includes completing hours of continuing education, doing training on billing and PTA and assistive personnel supervision through her employer, changing her practice when it comes to delegation and documentation of delegation and supervision of assistive personnel, changing her billing practices to come into conformity with the training she's been receiving from her employer, as well as participating in voluntary internal chart reviews among the therapists at her practice group. So she will be testifying as to all of that through her statement after Ms. Wheeler speaks. And we ask that the board take into consideration all of those actions she's taken in response to this complaint to improve her practice and address the concerns that the board raised at the initial review portion of this case. Thank you.
Okay. I'm working off the script that I've been given. So I think what we'll do is we'll hear from Ms. Marker, right? The board will then, if they have questions for her, we'll go through that. And then we will hear from RW. Okay.
And Dr. Cornwell, members of the board and those addressing the board, this is Mark Harris. If we could just remember to refer to the complainant by her initials, we can sanitize the references to her name in the minutes, but if we can just remember when referring to her to use her initials only. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Ms. Marker, it's your turn.
Hello, my name is Susan Marker. I want to thank you again for taking the time to consider this matter. Since the last time I appeared before the board at the initial review of this matter, I've implemented improved practices, and I've also completed education to try to ensure a similar complaint is not submitted against me in the future. My employer, the Center for Physical Excellence, has taken this complaint as seriously as I have, and in response to it, required all staff to complete on-site billing training. I actively participated in that training, which included a review of the billing code definitions and the guidelines of documentation to improve my billing practices and to ensure the treatment and documentation support the billing codes that I've entered. As part of that training, I received handouts with information about billing, documentation, coding, including Medicare guidelines that I reviewed and maintained for reference. As a result of this training, I have updated my billing practices to ensure I am using the correct billing codes to accurately capture the care given and to match the documentation. I, along with the other staff, have completed a documentation course with Mike Robertson, as well as the APTA audit course. I also participated in regular chart reviews with other therapists where I work, which leads other feedback on the documentation. I believe that has given me a more critical eye to allow me to improve my documentation. In addition to the training provided through my employer, on my own, I have completed CEUs through MedBridge, including the documentation for evaluations and re-evaluations and documentation, everything after evaluation until discharge. I've also taken the time to review the guidelines for PTA supervision and delegation. I've studied the cervical and shoulder assessments with the OGI Institute residency program. Regarding the practices, changes that I have made since receiving this complaint for the PTA supervision, I'm now documenting the delegation of care to the PTA. I'm meeting regularly with the PTA on each patient's date of service to review their progress and the needed changes to the plan of care. I also actively review the PTA notes and the care delivered on each visit. As a result of RW's complaint, I recognize that my treatment, documentation, and billing needed improvement. And I want the board to know that I take that very seriously, which I hope is evident by the education I've completed and the practice changes I have made. Responding specifically to RW's complaint, she was seen from 8/12 through 1/9/2020 for rotator cuff pain. I believe she was showing improvement in her shoulder based on the documentation regarding active range of motion, and given that her primary complaint was weakness. RW did not return for therapy after 12/16/2019, and she was discharged on 1/9/2020. On January 13, 2020, RW returned with a complaint of shoulder pain and a diagnosis of rotator cuff tear of the left rotator cuff capsule. She presented with left shoulder pain, limited motion, and pulling in the neck. The cervical quadrant test was positive. She was seen for 10 visits of aquatic therapy, including a straight arm and long arm pull down, chest press, rows, scapular elevation and depression, tricep extension, biceps curl, reverse fly, and internal and external rotation. She did report an increase in neck and left shoulder pain during this time period. When I reassessed her on 2/12/2020, she had not met her goals, and the previous goals were ongoing. She returned to aquatic exercise on 2/24 with a reduction in the exercises, which I hoped would address her complaints. However, I recognize in hindsight that I should have done more to reassess her plan of care and progress. When I saw her on 3/2/2020, after she had received land-based care, she complained of left upper trapezius pain. Based on the previous positive cervical quadrant test, I performed gentle cervical musculature and myofascial release, including OA release and left upper trapezius release. During the manual techniques, I monitored RW for signs of distress, including furrowing of the brow, jaw clenching, finger clenching, and breathing changes. I did not observe any of these signs of pain. We then progressed to therapeutic exercise with an experienced exercise technician with my supervision from the office door, which is open to the gym. The exercises were similar to her home exercise program, which she reports she was performing at home. Therefore, I expected she would be able to complete the routine without any complication. The exercises were prescribed at a decrease in repetition to reduce possible irritation to her shoulder. RW complained of pain with external rotation and retraction, which were stopped immediately. She had a flexed posture with forward head and rounded shoulders. At that point, the technician informed me of Ruth's increase in pain, and I recommended a cold pack, which was applied to her upper trapezius and shoulder sitting in the gym area. She left the office after the cold pack. On 3-3-2020, RW came into the office without an appointment, asking to be seen because she said she felt better after the manual techniques the previous day. I saw her pro bono using myofascial release. She reported a decrease in pain, but I still instructed her to follow up with the physician. I understand that the board has concerns about RW's care, and I recognize the areas of concern. I understand this was a patient with a serious injury, and I understand more frequent and detailed assessment and reassessment should have been performed. I also recognize that I should have documented my findings more carefully, as well as the plan of care and my discussions with and supervision of the assistant personnel involved in the care. As a result of this complaint, I am more thorough with my reevaluation and treatment plans, obtaining, reviewing, and documenting the objective data, plan of care, and updating patients' goals. I am more cautious with exercise prescription, with direct supervision, and with gradual progression with the transition to land-based care. I check in more frequently with patients to ensure they are tolerating the manual techniques without pain. I also no longer use the therapeutic activity code for reevaluations. I strive to provide quality care to my patients and to adhere to professional guidelines. During my 29 years of practice, I have never had a complaint. I have been providing physical therapy for many elderly patients since March of 2020 without complaints. I regret that RW had this experience, and I hope that the changes I've implemented will help ensure that no patient has a negative experience like this in the future. I appreciate your attention to this matter, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do any board members have questions for Ms. Marker?
This is Mr. Greer. I just have a few. Did I understand you to say that on 3-3, you recommended that she obtain, go to the emergency room?
I recommended she follow up with her primary care physician.
Okay. Had she already been to the emergency room by the time you saw her on 3-3?
Yes, she had told me she was at the emergency room the day before.
The day on 3-2 after
Correct.
Your treatment?
Okay. Yes.
I have looked through all of your records, and the record on 3-3 is just incredibly different. Can you explain that? All the other records, we have a pretty standard progress note. And then the record on 3-3 is just a paragraph. Can you just explain how we got that record?
Well, it was a flex note because the patient did not have an appointment to be seen. So I documented my note that way because she was seen pro bono, and with it not being a billable date, that is the way we record the information.
So that's how you record all of your non-billable appointments?
Correct.
Okay. Those are the only questions I have.
Anyone else have questions? Okay, then, RW, would you like to make would you like to introduce yourself, and then do you have a statement?
Yes, I'm RW, and yes, I do have a statement.
Go ahead.
When I was in the pool with Shiloh, and I was doing aquatherapy just prior to the day of, the morning of the appointment with Mrs. Marker, I had full range of motion of my left arm. And Ms. Shiloh could attest to that. And when Ms. Marker walked into the room where she worked on my shoulder and neck, she was very angry. I have no idea what she was angry about, and it was none of my business. But in my opinion, when you're that angry and you're going to be doing hands-on to a patient, you need to not be doing hands-on. Because she was very rough. She was very intense in her manipulation. And I left there, and when I couldn't do the on-land therapy, it hurt so bad. And I told her that I hurt so bad when I left the room where she was working on me. I went out to the parking lot. I got in the car, and I was in so much pain. I called back into the facility, and I said, can I come back in? I'm in really intense pain. And my understanding is they spoke to Ms. Marker, and she said, just go home and put ice on it. I ended up going to the ER because I was in so much pain, and they did an x-ray, and they showed nothing broken. I think they thought perhaps I had a broken bone, and that I needed to have an MRI or further tests done for my neck and shoulder. I spent about 2 weeks sitting here at home in a chair crying because I hurt so bad, and nothing stopped that pain. I saw a neurosurgeon, and he said on examination and testing that she had impacted the C4 nerve in my neck, and that's what was causing the pain going down below my shoulder, more like by that bone, I can't think of the name of that bone. And that hopefully with perhaps some injections that would handle that pain, because he said that, you know how much pain you're in right now? And I said, oh yeah, I do. And he said, if I do surgery on that, it's going to be, that nerve doesn't like to be touched. And so he said, when that nerve is disturbed, the pain is even more intense. So I chose to not even consider surgery at that point, and basically came home and either laid on my bed or sat in the chair, hoping that this would eventually not be so intense that I could live with it. And the fact that now I have very limited range of motion with that arm, which just that morning of Ms. Marker's intense therapy, I had full range of motion. I still have very limited range of motion with that arm. So it's costing me a lot of money to hire people to do things that I've been doing my whole life. It's just wrong. And my intent on reporting Ms. Marker was that she would no longer have the ability to put her hands on another patient who perhaps wouldn't have the ability to file a complaint. And it is the first time in my entire life I have ever filed a complaint about anything or anybody. This was just very wrong, and I'm still so limited, and it's very miserable for me. And, oh, it was not gentle manipulation that she did on my neck. Not gentle. Not at all.
Thank you. I'm assuming that if board members have questions for you, that you'd be willing to answer them?
Certainly.
Okay. Do any board members have questions for RW?
This is Karen Bustillo. I do have a couple. RW, I'm sorry for your suffering. But is it my understanding that when you first went for therapy in January, you knew that you had a rotator cuff tear of your shoulder?
Yes.
And how did you had an MRI or something previous that had shown that?
It wasn't an MRI. It was a, I can't think of what it's called. Not an ultrasound. Maybe it was ultrasound.
Okay. Well, that
should be in those papers somewhere.
All right. And had you during this time at all, like, returned back to an orthopedic doctor?
I went to a pain doctor, Dr. Bradley Benson, to see if some injections might help the pain level. I also saw a doctor, I think his name was Williams, who basically said there was nothing he could do.
Sure. Were you offered surgery for this condition at all?
From Dr. Thomas, he said he could do surgery, but that the pain would be so much more intense than what I was already dealing with. And so I chose to try some other options, and the epidurals were where I went with that.
The surgery you were offered, that was from the neurologist. Am I understanding that correctly? And they wanted
the neurosurgeon. I'm sorry. Because the pain was coming from that C4 nerve in my spine, in my neck, and it was presenting itself down. I can't think of what that bone is down below your shoulder. I'm sorry, but I can't think of what it's called.
In your arm?
No, it's down below my shoulder on my back.
Oh, like your shoulder blade?
Yes, thank you so much.
Sure. Okay, so it was pulling down your back more than your arm.
Yes.
I see. And did you ever do injections then for your neck or shoulder?
I have done several injections. They help temporarily, but there's no permanent fix here for me.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your answering the questions.
Well, you're welcome.
Any others with questions?
This is Mr. Barton. I have some questions.
Go ahead.
So RW, it's from your testimony and the statements that you provided us, it seems that you've got an idea or at least a belief as to the specific thing that caused, like the specific action that causes injury. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you describe for me exactly what Ms. Marker did to you that you believe caused this injury?
It was very intense manipulation of my neck.
Okay. Was she like twisting your neck or pulling on your neck? What? Can you kind of describe what happened that caused that pain?
Moving her hand back and forth across the back of my neck, and with such intensity, and like I stated earlier, when she walked in the room, she was very noticeably angry. And again, what I said was, I don't know what that was about, and then that was none of my business. But it's very sad that she walked in with that kind of attitude and then was doing a hands-on at the same, you know, with that same kind of mindset.
Okay. Now, is it your testimony today that after she did this manipulation or this kind of rubbing on your neck, that you had pain immediately after that?
Yes.
And you let her know that?
Oh, yes.
what was her response?
Her response was, I want you to go out in the gym and work on the other exercises.
Okay.
Which I couldn't do.
Okay. Did you speak with her after you attempted those exercises and couldn't do them?
No. Okay. I was crying. And I just wanted to go home.
Okay.
Any other questions, Ms. Burton?
Not at this point.
Okay. Anyone else? How about Ms. King? Do you have any questions for RW?
I did have just one, RW. This is Dr. King. I wanted to just ask if you've had any, I know you had some injections and some other treatments that have provided some temporary relief. Have you sought additional physical therapy? Have you found a therapist that you feel is providing any relief to what you're experiencing right now?
I went to Backways in Prescott, and the woman that was working on me said that she felt there was nothing she could do to fix this issue. And so in my mind, that came down to, again, the fix, quote unquote, would be surgery, which I hesitate because I live alone, and it's very difficult when you have to take care of yourself, especially when you have that kind of intense type of surgery.
Right. Do you recall how many visits you had with that PT?
No, I honestly don't.
Okay, that's totally fine. Thank you.
Mr. Leone or Mr. Greer, either of you have questions for RW?
Nothing for me. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I actually have a question. And then are we able to go back to ask Ms. Marker?
We can when we're done with RW, so to speak.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
RW, my question is around when you left the clinic that day. You had mentioned that you were in a lot of pain. You called the clinic and asked them if you could come back in because of the pain you were in. And you had mentioned that you were told that Ms. Marker had just said put ice on it at home. Was that message relayed by somebody specific in the clinic? Or did Ms. Marker get on the phone and talk to you about that? And is that where you got that from?
No, Ms. Marker never got on the phone. It was whoever answered the phone at the front desk. She said, can you hold a moment? And I'm sure she obviously went and asked Ms. Marker, and she came back and she said, Ms. Marker said to just go home and ice it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Mr. Cornwell, I actually have one follow-up if we could.
Go ahead.
So, RW, one of the things that I'm interested in is it looks like after this event occurred and you went to the ER, you came back and sought treatment again for Ms. Marker. Can you tell me?
No, not. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Am I mistaken?
Yes. I was seen by the woman that owns the practice. I would never let Ms. Marker put her hands on me again. Never.
Okay, so you were seen. Your recollection is that on the 3rd, which is the day after this, you were seen by a different physical therapist.
She is the owner of the of the practice, and I honestly can't remember her name.
Okay.
She's the one she did dry needling on my neck. And I'd never heard of dry needling before, but she did dry needling, and I told her very specifically, I said, Miss Marker was so angry when she was working on me. She was angry about I don't know what. And she said, well, she's a very good therapist. And I'm thinking to myself, now why do I hurt so bad? And why do I have limited range of motion when that morning, before she put her hands on me, I had full range of motion? And she never really had an answer about that. She kind of tiptoed around that question. I never got a definitive answer from her.
Did you ever reach out and speak to this this woman who's the owner of the facility? Did you ever communicate with her at all in writing or in any way about this treatment?
About what? I'm sorry?
About the treatment that she provided you on the 3rd.
I talked to her about what Ms. Marker had done in great detail.
Okay. Do you have any, like, did you send her maybe a text message or any kind of a letter about that?
Not that I remember, no. Just that I had seen her several times, and you know, I discussed this with her, and it's kind of very difficult for me to realize how long I had worked on this shoulder issue that I had, and doing the aquatherapy and a little bit of land work, but mostly aquatherapy, that I had progressed so far, and I was so happy with where I was at, and now look where I'd gotten to.
Just for the board's benefit, I believe that the physical therapist in question that is the owner of the practice is Laura Markey.
Thank you. I forgot her name.
Mr. Barton, do you have any other questions?
Not at this time.
Would you like to... Are you thinking you might want to redouble back to RW? Or?
I may want to redouble back after I speak with Ms. Marker.
Okay.
Mr. Cornwell, I do have some questions for Ms. Wheeler. I could ask her a couple follow-ups if the board members are done with their questions. Or with RW, I apologize.
Mr. Harris, I don't think we've ever had that request.
Well, and Dr. Cornwell, what I would ask is that Ms. McCollum ask those questions to you and the board, and then you can collectively decide whether or not you'd like to ask RW those questions.
Okay. All right. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
All right.
It's really more of a clarification I'd like, is that she's referenced Ms. Markey, and my understanding is that she saw Ms. Markey for several sessions after this visit with Ms. Marker. I think maybe 6 sessions potentially, and indicated some temporary relief during those follow-up sessions before she stopped coming back to Center for Physical Excellence, and that was the clarification I wanted to make. I can just make that, or we can ask it through her. I'm not sure how you want to go about that.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that came out in the documentation we had, that it was more than one visit and that she got some relief.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. RW, I'm assuming that you're okay with that, that you saw Ms. Markey for several visits and that you got some temporary relief.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, all right, Ms. Marker, you can at this point, you're welcome to do kind of like a rebuttal of RW. If you wish, it sounds like one or more board members might have a question or two for you. So what would you like to do?
Mr. Cornwell, if I may, could I do sort of, since she's my client, question and answer to help guide her through that? And then she wants to make an extra statement and, of course, answer questions. Is that Would that be allowed?
Mr. Harris?
Dr. Cuomo, members of the board, typically this is the opportunity for Ms. Marker to address you. This isn't a formal administrative hearing. However, if you think it might expedite things, you can certainly, you know, allow Ms. McClellan to ask Ms. Marker a few questions and just see how it goes. But, you know, the normal, you know, processes that are followed in an administrative hearing do not, are not present during an informal hearing. So you have a little bit more discretion in how you want to proceed.
Okay. All right, Ms. McClellan. Do you think that your question posed to Ms. Marker would help us?
That's my hope, is that I can move it along, and then you could ask whatever follow-ups from that you may have, or maybe Ms. Marker will even have her own. We're not in the same room, so if she may have more she wants to add, I can't really communicate with her directly, but if I could, to help maybe lead the process, I'd be happy to do that. I think that would be beneficial.
Okay. We'll start, and let's go ahead and ask some of the questions, Ms. Marker, and we'll see where it goes.
Ms. Marker, you've heard RW describe that on March 2nd, she perceived that you entered the gym and began working on her, and her perception is that you were angry or upset. Do you have, maybe describe for the board if you have any recollection of being upset or angry? Describe that for the board, I suppose.
Well, I don't recall being angry that day. It is a very busy clinic, and so sometimes I might feel a little bit more anticipation because of the busyness of the clinic. Anytime if I were feeling upset, I would certainly not be taking that out on my patient and not causing any harm. I have been told in the past that I have kind of an angry look when I'm at rest with my face, but I'm indeed not angry, but I think that may have been what she was interpreting.
And in connection with that, when you were doing, as she described, sort of moving your hand from side to side across her back, do you have any reason to believe you were doing that aggressively, intensely, or over firm in any way that you believe would be inappropriate with regard to the pressure or the manner in which you were doing that sort of rubbing across the neck back and forth?
No, I don't feel that I was aggressive. And considering her age, I was very cautious about that and would indeed make sure that I was careful with my manual techniques.
Do you know, I mean, you know, RW is saying she was in immediate pain after you did the put your hands on her neck area, and that she's attributing all of sort of subsequent visits with providers about the C4 to this particular hands-on exercise or treatment that you were providing. Can you describe for the board kind of what you were doing and whether you had any reason at that time or now to know how that would have caused that mechanism of injury, how you would have injured the C4 with what you were doing?
Well, one of the techniques I used was a cervical distraction. And so it's a blocking of the lower segment, C5 or C4, and then a gentle distraction between C3 and C4. Sometimes when the release of the distraction happens, sometimes that can catch the sleeve of the nerve.
Do you believe that you, even if that did happen, was that an unintended consequence that you believe you were still acting within the standard of care, but it had this unintended consequence potentially? Maybe describe for the board sort of your reaction to how to the injury that she's claiming.
Absolutely, I wasn't intending to create any problem. I think that sometimes tissues respond a little differently than I would anticipate them to. And at the time, Ruth did not inform me of having any pain immediately after she, in fact, had told me she was feeling a little bit better.
It sounds like we have kind of a he said situation, he said, she said situation on that particular point. And so as we saw from your note on the next day when she came in just for an unplanned visit, if she had complained to you about pain on March 2nd, would you have told her to go to the doctor? Would you have done anything if she had, you know, called back into the office from the parking lot? Would you have said, just go home? Or what would you have done if you had been aware she was in this significant amount of pain?
Well, my recommendation was for her to use the ice and to follow up with the Dr. Williams, the orthopedist.
And if you had been aware from someone in the front desk that she had called in, do you believe you would have said, not just ice, but recommend that she go see an orthopedist?
Yes.
Her treating orthopedist. Do you have any reason to know if either RW didn't hear that portion of it, the front desk, for whatever reason, may not have correctly relayed that, since you weren't directly the one talking to her? Do you believe, based on the practice that you, where you work, that the front desk usually would relay, if she's having pain, go follow my recommendation to see an orthopedic physician?
Yes, and I think that maybe they had failed to properly deliver that message to her.
In the future, or if you had another situation like this and a patient calls in with any kind of pain, next time, do you think you would just be the one that gets on the phone instead of relying on someone from the front desk to relay the information so that you could talk directly with the patient?
Absolutely.
RW made a statement earlier that she thinks that you should lose your license. And I just want to give you an opportunity to respond to that and to explain to the board members whether you think that that is a fair outcome, and what have you done to prove to them that you should be allowed, after 29 years of practice, to continue practicing?
Well, I think that loss of my license would be an excessive amount of disciplinary action. I have successfully practiced with thousands of patients over my several years of practice, and have continued to improve my ability to treat patients. I treat a lot of Medicare patients, and I've been very aware of interacting with them, keeping my techniques gentle, especially with those older folks, and to make sure that I interact with them more clearly and get a clear picture of how they're responding to the techniques.
Those are all the questions I had.
All right. Ms. Marker, do you have anything to add? If not, then I think there's some board members might have questions.
I don't believe I have anything to add at this point.
Okay. Any board members?
Actually, I do. Sorry, I changed my mind. after 3-3, RW saw Laura Marquis for about 6 visits, so she had returned to the clinic within about 5 days from the time that I had seen her.
Okay. All right. Any board members have further questions for Ms. Marker?
I have one question. Some of my other ones were actually answered within the questioning that just occurred, but my only other question is, so it seems like, Ms. Marker, you recall RW calling back into the clinic and relaying your recommendations to, you know, whoever may have been the one to take that call. Is there any reason why you didn't ask for her? Because according to RW's testimony, she was in her car in the parking lot. Is there any reason why she was not invited to come back in to kind of reassess what might have been going on? Or were you even aware that she was in the parking lot? Was that information that was relayed to you?
I was not aware that she was in the parking lot, and I was already attending to other clients at the time.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Margaret, Dr. King, a question. Patient RW states that after the intervention around what she had said that you had done around that, the shoulder and the hands-on manipulation. She was in tears. Do you recall seeing your patient crying?
No, I don't.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a few, Dr. Cornwell.
Go ahead.
So, Ms. Marker, I want to understand why you chose to do this cervical distraction on the second. What was the idea behind engaging in that particular form of treatment on that day?
Well, she was complaining of the soreness in the neck and previously had a positive cervical quadrant test. And so I felt that this would be indicative. And the C434 nerve root innervates the trapezius, and the trapezius was the main muscle she was complaining of. And I felt that if I created a little bit of gentle distraction, that would open the foramina and take some of the pressure off of the nerve.
Okay. And you mentioned that she had a prior assessment. How old was that assessment?
A prior what?
You said somebody had done a prior, some type of assessment of her cervical area?
I had done a cervical quadrant test when she was evaluated on January 19th.
Okay. Did you do any kind of a cervical assessment prior to providing this treatment?
I just looked at the range of motion she presented with, and it was what I'd consider just functional. She had some limitation.
I think that's all I have for now. Okay. Well, I think that's all I have, actually. So,
okay.
So right. Dr. Cornwell doesn't wonder if I'm going to come back with even more.
All right. Are there any other board members who have questions for Ms. Marker? All right. So let's, Ms. Marker, either you or your attorney may make a closing statement if you wish.
I'll make a brief one. Thank you, Mr. Cornwall. I hope that the board can see that Ms. Marker is an experienced, knowledgeable physical therapist. She recognizes that with RW, and I think she's admitted this, that she wishes she had gone back and done more frequent reassessments, that she had been more thorough. It's someone who's practiced for a long time, and it's not for lack of competence or caring. It is just one of those things that if she could go back and do it again, she would certainly do that. And it has been a learning experience to remind her to do all of those things. There was no intent by any means to injure this patient. She thought she had a basis to perform the manipulation. She's explained that when she did it, she didn't believe she was using too much force or overly aggressive. If this was the cause of what has been injured or what has been claimed, I don't have a medical opinion from any physician saying that, but what she does recognize is she would go back and do things differently with RW, and that's not for lack of competence or caring. And to show that, she's tried to give you the information to show what she has learned and has changed in her practice. More frequent reassessments, better documentation, more detailed and frequent discussions about delegation supervision. And to show she's done that, she's not only telling you, but she's completed CEUs on her own for those areas. And she's done on-site training through her employer on those areas, including supervision, documentation, reassessments, and billing. And she has done self-study. So she's gone back on her own and reviewed through residency programs and through online materials to remind herself of all of these things that obviously she wishes she had refreshed earlier. And so we ask that the board take all of that into consideration, that there are things that can happen in a PT's practice that are unintentional, that are well-meaning, and that they believe they had sufficient basis for, and there can be unintended consequences. And that should not be a reason to take someone's right to practice away or in any way limit their license. And so we're asking that you take into consideration potentially education if you feel that that's appropriate. She's open to doing that even more than she's already done. and those kinds of steps so that she can keep practicing and treating all the thousands of patients that she has helped in her career. So thank you all for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. This concludes the portion of the interview where the board takes evidence and hears arguments. The board will now deliberate the case in public session. Right? So RW and Parker, more than likely we will not have any further questions. Okay? And we've heard your statement. So what would the board like? Any motions or discussion?
I think a discussion would be helpful at this point, just among the board. I'm not quite ready to entertain or to suggest a motion at this point, from my perspective.
That's fine. I think that's what this is, you know, some discussion.
I would like to hear the clinician's take on Josh's last group of questions about why there was work done on the cervical area.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that there was some imaging that indicated that there was problems in the cervical spine. That probably was an MRI, and that's kind of what I remember. So I'm assuming that Ms. Marker had that information ahead of time, feeling pain down between the shoulder blade. She's incorrect that it's not the trapezius, because the trapezius is actually innervated by a cranial nerve. But the rhomboids underneath it are innervated by the C4. So I mean, it's logical that the pain that she felt between her shoulder blades was coming from C4. And so if it's being pinched, then the idea is if you can distract it and pull the two vertebrae apart, then it should relieve that pain.
I would agree with Mark on that for sure. And typically in an orthopedic assessment, her primary complaint was of shoulder pain or dysfunction when she came in. And you always look at the joints above and below. And for the shoulder, that is the cervical spine and the elbow. And so there's typically some type of cursory, at least range of motion evaluation of the cervical spine done at that time. And then if there's findings, then you have to dig a little bit deeper into, is there a cause and effect between the shoulder and the cervical spine? Is one causing the other? Are they two separate problems? And try to tease it out a little bit more, more thoroughly that way.
So I guess to my fellow clinicians, I guess the reason, or to my the clinicians on the board, my concern on this is it seems to me from looking at the notes and from the testimony we've heard today that it may have been I want to be clear, I don't see anything that makes me think this marker intended to cause any harm, but that it may have been a little premature to engage in that kind of distraction without the kind of assessment to determine what, if any, correlation there was between the neck and that scapula pain and kind of an assessment of kind of how bad that range of motion was being affected. Do the clinicians on the board see any concern there?
Actually, no, Joshua, that's actually one of the most gentle ways to assess the cervical spine is with some gentle manual traction, distraction. You can, create a nice neuromuscular response of muscle relaxation with those types of techniques as well as, you know, get some minor joint separation and things like that as well. It is typically one of the first things you would do in a painful neck situation, and then move off plane from there based on what your findings are.
And in my experience, you know, working with the PTs that I've worked with, the distraction technique is used as an assessment technique as well as a treatment technique.
So the other question I had for the clinicians in the group is this type of nerve aggravation that RW is complaining of here, is that a known complication of this type of technique? Is that something you guys are aware of?
I don't believe I've had experience with that in many more years of practice than Ms. Marker. but unfortunately, there are some unintended consequences occasionally. And, you know, did she come in with a flared up nerve and it made it worse? I don't know that there's a way to know that, to be honest.
Okay. I also wonder about the lack of reassessment after the third. So if we assume that the charting is correct and Ms. Marker did see RW on the third, then I'm concerned with the fact that she took the time to do this intervention, which I think was a good thing. But it does make me a little concerned that she now knows that her client was in the ER complaining of this increased pain. At that point, at least she has to know that that's the case. And I think at that point, there was probably, the standard of care may have required her to go and assess that, or at least set a moment to go out and do that assessment to determine kind of what had happened at that point to see if there was some intervention she could do. Given the treatments that RW has received, I don't know how much of a causal difference that would have made. But from a standard of care perspective, is that concern something that you see as well?
I do feel that whenever there is a change in patient status, that you really do need to consider a reevaluation of the patient that's then sitting in front of you. If they're too flared up for too much of comprehensive evaluation, then I would send them back to their physician.
Dr. King, what are your thoughts?
A couple things. One, I was wondering, and that may be in the file that was updated, do we have copies of all of the additional CEUs and education and training that Ms. Marker's completed? Okay, thanks, Josh.
Yes.
All right. I'm not an orthopedic physical therapist with a lot of experience in cervical spine treatment specifically. So I would certainly defer to the experts on the board who have a great deal of practice in that area. So I don't have any specific treatment discussion or anything extra to add to this investigation. I do know that there are times when we are doing, as a physical therapist, following our treatment algorithms or following exactly what we feel like we should do. Given what's in front of us, if it's something new, I think it's general practice that we inform the patient we're going to do something new, we do it, and then we watch for any follow-up consequences or something that may occur after because it is something new. So I don't know if that's something that was missing from this piece that Ms. Marker, she's admitted that following up would be something she would do differently this time, but you know, I think it's just a general process for us to assess, do something, and then reassess, see how it went, and if there was any improvement or change in the status.
Any other discussion? How about a motion?
Could we start, Mark, potentially with, I'll start with a motion for a non-disciplinary action that includes CEUs for which she's already taken many of. And potentially, I don't know, I think monitoring has to be a disciplinary action, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, I'll second your motion, Kelly.
Okay.
So the motion is for a non-disciplinary order of continuing education, but accept what she's already done.
Well, and Dr. Cornwell, Dr. King, if it's possible, could you articulate what continuing education you would like to see in that order, that non-disciplinary order? And then what you can do is, if she's already taken it since the filing of the complaint, you can accept what she's done in satisfaction of those specific requirements. But I do think we need to be specific in the motion.
Yes, okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Harris. I think the CEU should include certainly documentation. 6-hour course, I think, is our standard on that.
Could we say 5.75 hours?
We could. We could say 4 hours.
I think 5.75 would be appropriate.
I'd like to ask for 5.75 hours of documentation CEUs. CEU, and I would defer to Karen on this, or Dr. Castillo, as far as CEUs around treating cervical spine neck impairments, potentially. So maybe, Karen, you could help elaborate on that. And then, go ahead. Sorry, Karen, what did you say?
Did she say that she took one?
I think she did take one.
No, it's all continuing education is the only certificates I'm seeing here.
Documentation.
Education.
Yeah, so I think it's reasonable.
Let's go and list what we would have wanted her to take, and then we can go back and see what she's already taken.
Yeah,
and
that's great. Karen, do you have some ideas on CEUs around cervical spine? Treating of cervical spine impairments or concerns?
I think it's appropriate to do 3 hours of cervical spine evaluation and treatment.
Okay. Would you would it be fair to add to that rotator cuff as well, since that was the patient's initial? Or do you feel like
it would be the problem?
Okay. Yeah. I think really honestly, documentation and treating in the cervical spine for me would be the CEUs I was exact, but open to any additional that you guys would like to add to the motion.
Well, that was the same idea I had as well, as, you know, potentially adding in the treatment and evaluation content.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say that I'm concerned, you know, I think the two areas of concern for me, and frankly, the areas that are making me consider some kind of a disciplinary action instead of a non-disciplinary, I'm concerned about the lack of reassessment after the injury. And I'm also a little concerned about the fact that this injury that RW has suffered is not, at least from what, you know, the clinicians on the board have said, it doesn't sound like this is a known complication. And there's a lot of experience on the board, and the fact that nobody has seen this in the past does concern me, because it seems to evidence to me that there may have been some, that this particular type of distraction may not have been done properly. So those are my concerns, and so I think if the board is looking at non-disciplinary action, I think those areas need to be addressed in CEUs.
Karen, is 3 hours going to be enough to cover those areas?
It may not be, Mark. Do you have a better time frame, six maybe?
Six, I was thinking more like six, only because Mr. Burton brings up a point that it may not have been an appropriate treatment given her situation. It was not that it was a bad, in and of itself it's a bad treatment, but it, given what she was going on at that moment, maybe it wasn't indicated. So information about how to assess and how to determine red flags for this treatment versus that treatment, things like that. So I would recommend 6 hours instead of three.
Yeah, I'm totally good with that.
And then I would say that those can be, okay, so it's tough to get an in-person CEU right now, but treating and assessing cervical spine through an online CEU, I don't know, I haven't done one, but would that be, you feel like it would be thorough enough, Dr. Brasier, or should we
documentation? The APTA has some absolutely fabulous home study courses.
Okay.
And that are way more hours than this is. And she should be able to access something through there, if not through MedBridge, but the orthopedic section does have some wonderful resources.
Okay, so then
MedBridge does as well. And I mean, MedBridge is a key tool that people use for OCS prep and things of that nature. So they have some very good evaluation courses and treatment courses.
Okay, so then clarifying that the CEUs can be completed online. Let's say that need to be completed within 6 months.
Okay. Does everyone understand what the motion now is? Do we have a second?
I second it.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to make sure. Does everyone feel like they understand the motion? It's a documentation. And what was the number of hours on documentation?
5.75.
And then 6 hours of orthopedic assessment and treatment of the cervical spine.
Correct.
All right. Do you want to include anything else like jurisprudence or ethics or anything like that?
I do think we should capture some of the delegation concerns that were found in the investigation. So I don't know that we can ask her to take the jurisprudence with a non-disciplinary, can we? I didn't think so.
No, Dr. King, we can't.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I was hoping that the documentation typically goes over supervision. So I think that would be handled there.
In agreement with that.
All right. Any further discussion about the motion?
Mr. Harris, just for my benefit, what is the kind of licensure difference between a probation order from the court and a non-disciplinary order with these CEU requirements?
The most significant is one is disciplinary and one is non-disciplinary. With a disciplinary order, not only does that, have consequences moving forward in a variety of different ways for the licensee, but also it's a reportable agency action. So there's a federal data bank that the board reports to that is shared by everybody. Also with disciplinary actions, should the licensee appear before you in the future, if you find based upon a new complaint that they engaged in unprofessional conduct, you can take into consideration as an aggravating factor the fact that they have been disciplined in the past.
Okay.
And Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, if I can just clarify, included in the motion is the opportunity for Ms. Marker to submit any continuing education courses that she has completed since the complaint against her has been filed with the board in satisfaction of this requirement. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Unless there's any further discussion on the motion, then I'll call the question.
One point of clarification, Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, if Ms. Marker has to take additional credit that she hasn't already completed, should that credit be pre-approved?
Yes.
I think it always has to be, but yes, absolutely. Approved by the board.
Yeah, especially since it would need to be approved that it's going to count towards whatever the board order was.
And it will not count towards continuing education requirement for renewal.
Correct.
Correct.
All right, I think we're ready to call the question.
Okay, the motion before you for case 2037, Susan Marker, PT, is to issue a non-disciplinary order to include 5.75 hours of documentation, 6 hours of orthopedic assessment and treatment of the cervical spine, all to be pre-approved by the board and completed within 6 months. Courses may be completed online, and courses will not count towards continuing education renewal requirements. Ms. Marker may submit continuing education already completed as evidence of meeting these requirements. Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Dr. Bastillo. You're muted.
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Leone? Mr. Leone, you're muted.
Sorry, yes.
Mr. Barton?
No.
Motion passes.
Okay. That completes, finalizes this. Thank you very much for everyone attending. Ms. Marker and JW and Ms. McClellan, thank you very much. If you have questions, the board staff will be happy to answer them for you.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Before we leave this completely, there was an indication that of whether or not to open up an investigation or open up a complaint against the two PTAs that were involved. Shiloh?
Those were already initiated.
Oh, they
were? Review, yes.
I'm sorry. All right.
Yeah, the two PTs, the board voted, the two PTs and the two PTAs, a complaint was opened on four of the clinicians.
Okay. So, my mistake. Sorry. Okay. Thank
Dr. Cornwell,
much.
Before moving forward, we need to stop the recording and restart, please.
All right. Go ahead.
Can we take a short break during this time?
Yes. Let's take, is 5 minutes okay?
Yes.
And then we'll come back and we will start, go with 2108, Sean Flanagan.
Okay, the recording will stop at 10:19. We will take a short 5 minute break and be back recording at 10:24.
Okay.